Sister Helen Prejean has made it her mission to work against the death penalty, which she believes is both morally wrong and unconstitutional. Prejean is a Roman Catholic nun from Louisiana. She's accompanied six men to their executions as their spiritual advisor. She wrote about the experience in her first book, Dead Man Walking. Now, Prejean has written about two men who were put to death who she believes were innocent. One of them was Dobie Gillis Williams. In 1984, he was on a weekend furlough from the prison where he was serving time for burglary when he was arrested for the stabbing death of Sonia Nippers in Manny, Louisiana. Ms. Nippers was stabbed in the bathroom of her home. Prosecutors said the evidence pointed straight to Dobie Williams, who was black. There was blood evidence, a piece of what investigators called dark pigmented skin left at the scene, scrapes on Williams' legs, a witness who put him near the scene of the crime, and three police officers who testified that Williams confessed to the murder. Dobie Williams, whose IQ was once measured at 65, was convicted by an all-white jury. He was on death row for 14 years, granted 11 stays of execution, before he was put to death at the age of 38. And Sister Helen Prejean firmly believes that Louisiana killed the wrong man.
See, his defense was so inadequate, never got independent forensic testing done. Woman was stabbed to death brutally in her bathroom of her home. Blood was everywhere. And the only witness was the husband who said, "My wife's last words were, 'A black man is killing me,' and then out the bathroom window." And Dobie had no blood on him. Supposedly he did all this, left, but they couldn't find any of the blood. Then when we did get a bloodstain forensic expert, Stuart James, to look at the blood evidence, you know, it was very disturbing because he brought me through it and he said, "There is no way that someone could stand here in this bathroom, stab a person 8 times, blood everywhere, and escape out of that very tiny bathroom window and not leave a fingerprint. It looked like he sailed through it like a gymnast, you know." And he raised all kinds of questions, and that's finally what really convinced me.
Dobie Williams has an IQ of 65, but he also has the presence of mind to reject one thing, which is an invitation from the warden. This is Warden Burl Kane, who wants him to eat his final meal with him, with the warden. And Dobie says no.
It was something else. You know, Warden Burl Kane is a born-again Christian who believes that he's basically sending people on to God. He makes sure they have spiritual advisors and really good preachers and all who come, and you hold hands, you say a prayer, you eat the meal, the warden presides. But seated at the table are the guards of the person's choice who are there in the death house, who later are going to strap him down and kill him. And Dobie was wonderful. He simply said, "Sister Helen, I don't think I'm going to eat that meal with that warden," he says, "because this ain't like no real Christian fellowship," he said, "because, you know, when we get up afterwards, they going to kill me." And I said, "Dobie, you don't have to eat that meal with them." And so he didn't.
Dobie Williams was granted 11 stays of execution, finally was executed in 1999, and you were there with him as his spiritual advisor when he's put to death. And you point out an irony that a few years later, the Supreme Court renders a decision that would have changed things if the timing had been different.
Oh, I know. Dobie, it was so sad in so many ways that the Supreme Court, it was the Atkins decision. The Atkins decision said you can't execute mentally retarded people. We're one of the last nations in the world to acknowledge that maybe mentally retarded people shouldn't be executed. And we now have a situation in the United States where 117 wrongly convicted people have come off of death row, saved by students for the most part, innocence projects. That's a lot of mistakes, and it's an impossible burden, I think, on everybody. And I just think we're in such a legal quandary. Plus, they have equal justice under law chiseled over the portico of the front of the Supreme Court. And it's becoming very clear that the death penalty is very much a Southern phenomenon. Of the 10 Southern states that practice slavery the longest, over 80% of all executions are in practice done in these states. Well, what does that mean?
You describe an encounter in this book, you're at the airport in New Orleans, where you run into Justice Antonin Scalia, who, as it turns out, is a hunting buddy of your brother's.
Can you believe that? He goes duck hunting with Louis, my brother. And when I heard Louis was doing this with him, I said, Louis, do you know who he is? All these cases, these death penalty cases, you can always bank on his vote that he's going to uphold the death penalty case. And so I get off the airplane. I just come from D.C. It's a Sunday night, Concourse A, Gate 7, New Orleans Airport. And lo and behold, who do I see standing there fiddling with the headphones of his portable CD player was himself. And I was so surprised to see him that I didn't even use his title. I just went right up to him and I just said, "Are you Scalia?" And you know, he has a great sense of humor. And he goes, "Well, somebody's got to be." And he's fiddling with his little headphones. And so I said, "Justice Scalia, I'm Sister Helen Prejean." And he knows about me, of course, in my work. He's mentioned it in talks he gives. And then I said, "Justice Scalia, I want to tell you something. I'm writing a book. You were a decisive vote in the cases of two men that I have accompanied to execution. I just want to tell you, I believe these men were innocent, and I'm writing a book about their cases, and I just want you to know I'm taking you on in this book."
I'm taking you on.
Yeah, real big threat, right? And he goes, "I'll be right back at you." And he jabs his finger like this, you know. Actually, I'm not taking him on, but it's to bring the American people through this so they can understand how we are in an impossible situation here with the death penalty and the constitutional issues that I believe are present. Because over the last 20 years, the Rehnquist Court has slowly stripped away all the constitutional protections, like you should have effectiveness of counsel and a jury of your peers. They have not dealt with race and a number of things that structurally make the death penalty unconstitutional. And Justice Scalia's argument is, well, the only way to determine an evolving standard of decency would be when the 38 states that have it on the books, that the legislatures will take it off the books. And I'm saying the southern states that do executions the most are never going to take it off the books until a federal court makes them. The same way they wouldn't have stopped segregation in schools or whatever unless the courts told them to do that.
It's interesting about Justice Scalia. He, like you, is a practicing Catholic and finds his justification for the death penalty in the Bible, which you strongly disagree with. You say, "I cannot recognize Scalia's God."
Absolutely not. I mean, what is his argument? When you look at Romans 13, he says the government has been appointed by God, the God of wrath, to kill evildoers. You have to critique governments. Governments are not always agents of God. Governments can do unspeakable things to their people. I've been dealing with this Bible quoting in a death penalty for 20 years now on the road, and I do a lot of radio talk shows. We'll now open the phone to our callers. "Okay, Chuck, you're on. What you got to say to the good sister here?" "Well, I have my Bible open to Exodus here, and it says those who shed blood will have their blood shed. Clearly, God wants us to have the death penalty." And I go, "Chuck, look at the paragraph right before where there's also the death penalty for adultery. Or look four pages back where there's the death penalty for kids sassing their parents. 37 different crimes in the Old Testament for the death penalty. You know, you Christian, Chuck? Do you try to follow where Jesus?" "Yes, I am a very good Christian." "Why are you quoting the Old Testament? Why don't you go to Jesus, who was executed by the state and whose last words were, 'Forgive them, they know not what they do,' and who taught us never to do hate for hate, but to return love for hate and to forgive our enemies and to pray for those who persecute us?"
Justice Scalia, though, would say that capital punishment is enshrined in the Constitution, and he's a strict interpreter of the Constitution and follows that as his guide.
Yeah, the framers did allow in two places, you know, for the death penalty. The framers also allowed for constitutional protections for any individual brought on trial for their very life before the powers of the state. And that is what is not being upheld.
I want to end by going back to Dobie Williams, who was put to death in 1999. And you describe his final moments. He's got rheumatoid arthritis. He's walking very slowly to the death chamber. And he's afraid of needles, which you know. And I wonder if you could just talk a bit about his last words and your presence there.
Oh, well, he was scared of needles. And this, of course, was the third time he had been brought into the death house to die. And each time he had tried to summon up, you know, being brave and doing it with dignity. And so the last hours or so together, the warden had said, "Hey, Dobie, you want some ice cream, anything?" Because he hadn't eaten the meal, you know. And so Dobie's eating the ice cream, a little of it. And so then when the warden says, "Now look, Dobie, you know, we could take in a wheelchair, you know." And Dobie looked at him, "No, I'll walk." And so he walked very slowly, and I was behind him. And they have this thing of the secrecy. See, they close the curtains. They don't want anybody to be witnessing why they put the needles in. But it was taking time. See, they had drawn the curtains. 5 minutes goes by. 10 minutes goes by.
This is to get the IV in.
To get the IV in. So I knew they were having difficulty in finding a vein. Oh, and I am just praying for him. Like, "Dobie, be brave. Be brave, Dobie." And then they opened the curtains, and he was trying to move his head over toward me so that he could see my face. And later I found out, and the warden had said this out to the news, that because the warden said to him, "Dobie, any last words you have, you know, because, you know, here's a chance if he's guilty." And he had disobeyed his mama and been out the night the murder happened of this woman and Manny. And he always blamed himself for disobeying his mom. He had gone drinking at Fred Harris's store, told his mom he wasn't going to do it. And for him, the disobedience to his mama was the huge thing. And his last words then were, "I'm so sorry about the trouble I got everybody into because of all of this." And then he died.
Sister Helen Prejean, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Sister Helen Prejean's book is titled The Death of Innocence, an Eyewitness Account of Wrongful Executions. I spoke today with the district attorney who prosecuted Dobie Williams. Don Burkett pointed out that a second, more comprehensive test put Williams' IQ at 76, not 65. And he said the evidence of Williams' guilt was overwhelming. Burkett said any reasonable person familiar with the evidence would say that he was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. The day of Williams' execution, Burkett told me, was a hard day and a sad day. He went on, "I didn't take any personal pleasure in it whatsoever. I didn't celebrate before, and I didn't celebrate after. But there was no question, absolutely no question, about his guilt." You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.